Turn back to Matthew 23 and verse 1. Who is in charge of you? Who is in charge of you? Who is it that makes the ultimate decision about what to do from day to day? Who is it, should I ask, what has the ultimate authority in your life? Of course, the answer to that question will rather depend on what you mean by authority, won't it? Some people will say that they are their own authority. Others, that their spouse holds ultimate authority. For some of us, the answer is a more complicated one. I say some of us, I mean I'm including myself in all of this. The answer is a more complicated one, because although you really want to have the final say in decisions, in reality the pressure from your children with the pester power or the grizzle power is what actually rules. It's what affects how you make decisions day by day. That's what holds sway. Or some others may say, well, actually, circumstances hold the ultimate authority in my life. I would be an entirely different person or an entirely different way of behaving if only my circumstances were different. By circumstances, I mean money or job or home or whatever. The Bible is very clear, isn't it? We've been seeing it all morning. You can't avoid it. Jesus Christ is the ultimate authority in the universe, whether we like it or not. God holds the ultimate authority. And even if you and I don't want that to be true, and I trust most of us do this morning, or even believe that it's true, and I guess there are some here that may not believe that it's true, everyone one day will know that he is sovereign. That is no doubt about that at all. We've read it in Revelation. It is definitely true that one day every knee will bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Whether the world likes it or not, that is going to happen. Gordon Brown's knees will bow. George Bush's knees will bow. He would say they already have. Robert Mugabe's knees will bow. It's a very dangerous thing to say only God can move me. Remember, the Titanic was the ship only God couldn't sink. Here in Matthew 23, the problem has been that the Pharisees and the teachers of the law have assumed in their culture this position of authority. And in fact, as we can see, Jesus has already made clear, it is a false authority. It's a false authority that they have abused and misused and now hold to purely for their own ends. Here are the Old Testament people of God, the Jews, and Moses was the prophet through whom God had given them the law, the way they are to live in response to his grace. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they've grabbed that authority. They've sat down on Moses' seat. The phrase, in fact, in the New International Version doesn't quite do it justice. It says in verse 2 that the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Actually, what it should really say, and I think the ESV covers this, on the NASB, it communicates it better, they have sat down in Moses' seat. They've grabbed that authority falsely. And they began, and having sat down in Moses' seat, the whole idea of what they're doing is to merely feather their own nests. Jesus has silenced all of their challenges and graciously given them something to think about. But he's more to say to the crowds who are watching and to these disciples who need to learn. Let's just reread verses 1 to 4 so that we can refresh our minds on what's going on. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, they sit down, they've sat, I've already said, in Moses' seat. So you must obey them and do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. They tie up heavy loads and put them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are not willing to lift a finger to move them. Have you ever been in a situation where the wrong person seems to have taken charge? Some years ago, Ruth and I were at a Christmas, long before the children were born, at a Christmas party in Scotland. It was a church Christmas party, and it was it had all the kind of normal trappings of a church hall Christmas party, I suppose. It were paper plates and paper hats and paper cups and huge, large paper tablecloths covering the tables and paper napkins and the bits and bobs of food around, and we were all kind of squashed in, and all of a sudden, the lights went out because there was a power cut. And that was okay. Nobody panicked. Until what happened next. And a self-appointed authority stood up and, getting his lighter out of his pocket, flicked it up and said, "Ni problem, everybody, I've got light." And at that point, so did everybody else. I have to tell you, it's as close as I've got to despair. I grabbed my wife's hand, located the fire exit, which was just nearby, and started to move towards it, only to my great relief to discover that the lights came back on, and the lighters went away, and the whole lot did not go up in flames. Here are these Old Testament people of God. And the people who have grabbed the authority, the leadership, the people who have put themselves in charge, are doing it for their own ends. They've applied the authority to people, to a people who had to obey them, but their hypocrisy was clear. And all they did for people's lives was to make matters worse than if they weren't there. Do you see what Jesus says? They bind up great heavy loads on men's shoulders, and they themselves aren't willing to lift a finger to move them. They make people's lives simply more difficult. That's all they're achieving. Everybody's lives but their own. They denied the truth. They resisted the truth. They resisted Jesus, the obvious king, right the way through Matthew's gospel. We've been seeing everything he's done, everything he's said, everything he's taught, all the answers he's given. In the end, he finally silenced them because they didn't know. And what do? They don't bow and say, "Yes, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God." They say, "How can we get rid of this one? Because he's undermining us." They still would not believe. Remember back in chapter 11 how Jesus had said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am humble and gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." God's authority, which the authority that the Lord Jesus wielded, is like that. It is. It helps, it loves, it cares. It takes account. It has our best interest at heart. We've got to see that as we open up this gospel, that God has our best interest at heart. His grace works in us to know him and to love him. If you're facing a tough situation in life right now, just stop and think for a moment. God has neither lost control of your life, nor is he maliciously manipulating your life. He is lovingly guiding you to a glorious open future because he has your best interest at heart. If that were not true, he'd never have sent his son to die for you. His yoke is easy. His burden is light. Think about who it is that you answered that question truly for. The authority that rules your life, who's in charge, whatever it is. Well, if actually it isn't Jesus, then it will certainly be like these Pharisees, because anything but God will make men's burdens heavier and isn't the slightest bit interested in helping, for they serve only themselves. False authority, you see, which is what these guys practice, false authority shows itself off. It's all about showing itself off, doing its own thing. Verse 5 of chapter 23, everything they do is done for men to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. Verse 6, they love the places of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. Verse 7, they love to be greeted in the marketplaces and to have men call them rabbi. You could add a whole pile of other things to that, couldn't you, about false authority. See, actually what these guys did was really rather clever and subtle. Phylacteries were little leather boxes, little boxes with strings on, which contained pieces of parchment with maybe two or three or four commandments written on, pieces of the law written on. And they tied them on their arms, or they tied them on their heads. If you look up Orthodox Judaism now, some people still do that. And the reason they did it was because, as Moses had told him in Deuteronomy 6, to write the laws down, and Deuteronomy 6, to tie them as symbols on your hands and to bind them on your foreheads. It was a reminder. That was the idea. It was just as to write them on the doorposts of your home, just as to talk about them as you walk along the street and as you sit and with your children and so on. The whole idea was to bear these things in mind. It's to be a constant reminder to you that the grace of God is at work in your life and you are to honor him. That was Moses' idea. But what they'd done with these little boxes was make them big boxes. There's boxes and boxes, aren't there? You can have reminders and reminders. And they've done the biggest one. The tassels on their clothes are likewise there as a reminder in obedience to what's taught in Numbers 15. But these guys had taken them to extreme. And I said it was subtle and clever because what they'd done is taken what God had said. And their defense was, I'm only putting scripture into practice, aren't I? But of course they'd done it for their own glory and brought the attention to themselves. We have a tendency to do that, don't we? In fact, anything we do that we think is holy, it's worth asking that big question, who gets the praise from my doing this? I've already said to the children today, people who want to be thought extra holy, present company excluded, the ones I picked on, carry large Bibles or wear large crosses, maybe. Or with their clothes, maybe they wear grand hats in some circles. Or in other circles, present themselves as ostentatiously scruffy, just to show that they're not at all, that they're so holy they can't be bothered to worry about what they're wearing. Actually, whatever they do, if they do it to be seen, it's wrong, says Jesus. But it's not just what these Pharisees wore, was it? See, what they did had the same effect. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were delighted to sit on the top table at a dinner party. Or they expected to be made a fuss of in the marketplace. Wherever and whenever they could be singled out for praise, they took it. At any situation, they took it. They loved being told that they were very holy, gracious people. They loved it. Why? Because their authority was false. And their authority was intended only to win praise for themselves. False authority, that is authority in apparent holiness that brings attention only to the bearer, is merely that of a show-off. Just think again. It's all too easy to fall into the same trap of attention-seeking behavior for all of us, isn't it? All of us are potentially guilty of this. So we don't expect to be greeted in the marketplace and told rabbi or, you know, whatever. But sometimes as Christians, we can be seen at certain meetings because people will know we're spiritual and thus will take our righteousness seriously. Or we're seen not to go because we want to be thought of as self-sufficient and somehow beyond all of this stuff. Whatever it is, actually, whatever you use to fill in the blank, or I use to fill in the blank, if it's done to show off, to show people how holy we are, to gain praise from others, then it's wrong because it's self-rule. Contrast that with Christ's authority. See, Jesus couldn't be clearer about who's in charge, could he? Verse 8, you are not to be called rabbi, for you have only one master, and you're all brothers. And do not call anyone on earth father, verse 9, for you have one father, and he is in heaven. Nor are you to be called teacher, verse 10, for you have one teacher, the Christ. Let me say that those verses are very often misunderstood. But it's helpful to us to stop and understand what he's saying. To call someone rabbi as Jesus makes clear in the second half of the verse, was to believe that they had authority in and of themselves, that they should follow. Jesus says, don't call anyone rabbi because you have only one master. It's a kind of one side and the other side of the coin, isn't it? He's made that clear. Of course, a little digging in the historical record will bring you to a result that people followed this rabbi or that rabbi, and that was how they identified themselves. Their marker was to come under the category of following Rabbi Hillel or Rabbi something else. That's what they did. Indeed, despite what Jesus had said, the early church suffered from just such problems. Remember Paul's opening verses to the letter to the Corinthians? What was it that the Corinthian church did? Some said, oh, I follow Paul. And others said, oh, I follow Apollos. And the really super spiritual ones said, oh, I follow Christ. And it sounds laughable, but actually, you know, it still happens in our own day. People don't take the words of Jesus seriously. In our own day, people are all too keen to hive themselves off into different categories. I've had Christians who always want to find out when they hear Bible teaching, before they'll even think of taking it seriously, they always want to find out what the doctor said, meaning Martin Lloyd-Jones. So I'm certain would have put himself as far away from this idea as many others. We have identifiers such as Baptist or Anglican or Brethren, or dare I even say it, FIEC. And of course, if such labels are merely there just to explain where we're coming from, then that's fine. But if they're worn with a declaration of allegiance, then they're wrong. For Jesus said, you have only one master. Don't call anyone or anything rabbi, because your identifying label is belonging to Jesus Christ. That's it. For you're all brothers. Likewise, Father. It doesn't mean that you don't call your dad Father. Because the whole context makes clear that it's talking about your final reference, your final dependence. The one to whom you own your very existence actually is not anyone on earth. That's the point he's making. But to your loving Heavenly Father. Teachers among you, and the Sunday school teachers have gone out, so you can tell them this afterwards over coffee. It's okay to call them Sunday school teachers. And if you teach in a school, you're not falling foul of this verse to be called teacher. It's okay. But actually, the idea of teacher that Jesus is getting at here is one that the Pharisees gladly drew on themselves. Providing the label teacher is used by students to describe you as someone who passes on what you have learned, that's fine. But do you remember the words of the crowds in Matthew chapter 7? Maybe you'd like just to turn back to me, with me to it, on page 686. Verse 28 of Matthew 7. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the Sermon on the Mount it was, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. Why? Well, because he had taught as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law. The teachers of the law had a false authority. Jesus' authority was real. The teachers of the law quoted others, but they overstepped themselves and gave their wisdom as if people must take it. They had taken the law of God and built on it and built on it and built on it until the law of God was so completely masked and smothered by what they had built on that the authority came only from what they taught and not from him. Jesus had God's authority and could teach as no other. Don't call anyone on earth teacher who has authority in themselves and can tell you the right way to live, because actually your only authority comes from Jesus Christ. Do you see what he's doing? He's taking the crowds and he's taking the disciples and he's saying to them, who is in charge of you? Is it God or is it men? Is it me or is it them? What's your identifier? What's your focus? Let's come back to that original question as we continue for a second. Who is in charge of you? Your circumstances? Your children? Your spouse?
another relative? Pester power? Your employer?
Who do you refer to make decisions ultimately? To say anyone but Jesus is to miss the mark. Because only his authority proves itself humble. Verse 11 of chapter 23. The greatest among you will be your servant. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled. And whoever humbles himself will be exalted. If you've been a Christian a while, then one of the dangers of reading those verses is to simply let them wash over you. But actually, we must not miss how radical what he's just said is. It is remarkable. See, in our culture, as in theirs, authority always goes hand in hand with pomp and attention and pride and being served. It always works like that, doesn't it? In our culture, in a godless world, in a world that's rejected him, men like to puff themselves up. Power corrupts, goes the old phrase. Knowledge puffs up, says Proverbs. And we've seen recently, haven't we, how politicians have abused their positions of power to go beyond the level of assistance to do their jobs, to being served and bolster their egos and more. Power corrupts. Ultimate power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, goes the phrase. It's always been so. Because in our broken world, we're bound to focus away from God and onto ourselves. We're bound to focus away from the Creator onto the created thing. It always works like that. Right from the beginning, in the Garden of Eden, when the woman was persuaded to try to be like God, the cry has always been to rule ourselves. But Jesus wants his followers to have a new focus, a new locus, a new reference point. Those who know him are called to willingly acknowledge that he is Lord. That's goes without saying. But he has to say it. Those who know him are told to gladly set aside their own will to obey his word. And that's a challenge, isn't it? Every day, tomorrow morning, as you go to work, who are you going to please? Who are you going to honor? Who rules? And those who know him are warned that if they falsely take authority and exalt themselves, then just like the Pharisees, they will be humbled. But if they bow to his authority and honor him, then they will be exalted and one day be glorified with him in heaven. That is the promise. But there's one big question, just before we finish, that needs to be added up. Isn't there a huge inconsistency in what Jesus has just taught his disciples in this passage we're looking at this morning? See, it doesn't quite work, does it? Completely. What about him having authority? How come this doesn't apply to him? And the answer, of course, is that it does. More clearly, more wonderfully than to anybody else. Just back a page or so in chapter 20, Jesus, in a similar discussion, has said to them, verse 28 of chapter 20, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, the rebuked Pharisees that we've been reading about, and Jesus has been telling off, they're silent at the moment, but if you turn over two or three pages, they'll have their last blast. They will get him, which is what they want to do. They will crucify him. And in killing him, they will find that he is exalted. And they will be humbled. And as he rises again from the dead, the kingdom that is theirs will be proved to be empty, and some of them will turn and trust him. And his kingdom will grow and go on forever. And here we are, growing and going on forever. Who rules? in your life? Is it you? Is it your spouse? Is it your relatives? Is it your friends? Is it your children? Is it your circumstances? Is it your job? Is it your career? Is it your aspiration, your ambition? Or is it Jesus Christ? It must be Jesus Christ. Him we obey, because he is King.